Imagine if we could solve all the world's problems in a week. Global warming, famine, diseases, ethnic tension, all resolved. Sounds impossible, right? Well, apparently it's not. At least it's not for John Hunter's students. Over 30 years ago, the Virginia-based teacher created the World Peace Game. To play, students take on the role of world leaders and are charged with solving 50 interlocking problems. Students win if they fix all 50 crises and if every country's asset value increases. Hunter has written a book and given a TED Talk about the World Peace Game. He and his students were also featured in the 2010 documentary World Peace and Other Fourth Grade Achievements. A pleasure to welcome John Hunter to Current State.
Oh, thank you, Mark. Pleasure to be here.
What do you make of East Lansing?
I'm having a blast. Good. I've been talking to young people who are my only hope, and they've been so inspiring, really. So I feel very optimistic being here.
We introduced just the bare bones of the World Peace Game. Give us a little bit more insight into how this works. What roles the students take on and what problems they're trying to solve.
Sure. It's a 4-foot by 4-foot by 4-foot plexiglass tower, the structure of the game itself. There are four levels that emulate the earth, an undersea level, a ground and sea level, aircraft and outer space level. It towers above my 9-year-olds who usually play the game. There are four country teams of cabinets, a UN, a World Bank, and an arms dealers group. We even have a random weather goddess who runs a stock market and random events that occur. And a saboteur, one kid who's often in the office for causing trouble. I use that skill set to have that child play secretly to undermine the entire process while trying to achieve the public aims of the game, too.
So you have tried to recreate the advantages of the real world and the disadvantages of the real world.
We're putting kids into the realm of life itself rather than waiting until they're graduates and then go out into the real world in a safe way, though, appropriate way.
What did you hope students would learn through playing when you created the World Peace Game? What was the end game?
Well, you know, originally when I first started this in 1978 as a young teacher, I wanted to do what I thought was the goal of teaching, basically to impart information, stir knowledge, and that kind of thing. But the students have shown me through this practice over decades now, I think the real purpose of education is to develop a wonderful, fantastic, compassionate human being. And that's not written in our text, and it's not in our curriculum guides, but that seems to be the arc of the long-term assessment, what kind of person you become. And that, I think, is what they're saying is the real goal of what we're trying to do in education.
Okay. And so does that require not looking at a child as a child?
Well, you see them as an individual, unique and not completely formed as we all are, with their own experiences, their own inner wisdom and knowledge. And so I acknowledge the children as unique individuals when we meet, realizing they have a unique set of experiences and wisdom that I do not have. And I invite them to share leadership in the classroom with me. We have a classroom of co-teachers, 30 co-teachers in my room with me. So that makes our learning power much greater, I think.
I am so struck by the fact that somebody has appointed an international arms dealer.
You know, often my girls want that job. I don't know what it is. You know,
what
my arms dealers wear lace, you know.
What does that say?
Well, they're very wise about it because often they start out selling arms and realize, wait a minute, if I'm very successful, I'll have no customers. And they often dissolve their businesses and turn them into charities or invest in agriculture and solar energy. Who knew, you know, arms dealers liquidating their inventory.
Oh, my word. The game, I take it, often results in a spontaneous lesson that you say you could not have taught.
That's right.
Your students.
That's right.
So I'd like to discuss some of those lessons, starting with a 9-year-old girl who was a defense minister one of the poorest nations in the game. She's kind of along the lines of our previous exchange here. The defense minister of one of the poorest nations in the game decided to attack a rich neighboring country unprovoked.
Unprovoked. And it broke my heart. You know, you can tell I'm kind of a peacenik, I guess. I lean that way. But the game allows the students to be fully human and to engage in whatever activity they want to, warfare or not, as long as they can afford the activity and deal with the consequences. They can pay for it and deal with the consequences. And so she, for some unknown reason, attacked a large, wealthy, oil-rich neighbor right next door, marched her tank battalion in, surrounded their oil fields, locked down their fuel supply, and And everybody's mad at her. Her prime minister said, what are you doing? You know, this is insane. This is a peace game.
This
Why?
Is Iraq and Kuwait about 15 years ago is what it is.
Kind of sounds like that.
Yes.
I didn't intend that, but that's what the students made of it. Come to find out a few game days later, a few rounds of play later, that she had seen the trend lines of what was coming. She knew that an attack was imminent from that larger country to seek world domination, and she couldn't get anybody to believe her, so she took it upon herself philosophically, made a philosophical decision to go in and start a small war to avert a larger war. Mm. I mean, how deep critically in thinking that is, it's astounding. I couldn't have designed a lesson like that, but she took us to a place that was much deeper for us all, really.
How about that? Another student you talk about in your book, World Peace and Other Fourth Grade Achievements, is Pablo. Tell us how the game influenced Pablo.
Pablo influenced us, I think. Pablo was what we all would call a loser. He just was very slow, and he seemed not very with it. And people tended to work around him and just discount him. But I sensed something in him. There was a leadership quality I felt. You know, you couldn't prove it, you couldn't test for it, but I felt something was there. I offered him the leadership role of prime minister. And in my naive way, hoping that would sort of immediately turn him around. And of course, he broke my heart and proceeded to be just very slow and seemingly uninvolved for 5 weeks. And at the sixth week, something happened to Pablo. I could see it coming. His hands were trembling a bit. His eyes got really wide. And suddenly he moved to the board, made his moves. And I think he made something like 22 moves in about 3 minutes. He looked like a Jedi master in slow motion, moving pieces on all the levels of the board. And I was astounded. I said, Pablo, you see it all. He said, Mr. Hunter, I see everything. He had this sort of epiphany, this kind of grok, this kind of massive meta moment where he understood the entire equation of the game. And we were all astounded and applauded, really. We were just overjoyed. Pablo got it, but we hadn't thought he would, but he was allowed the chance to find his own way over time. Failure is a stock and trade for us. We think failure is a wonderful luxury because it's part of life. It's the way things are. So we don't protect children from that. We give them experience in handling and dealing with it and coming through it.
So all the while Pablo was watching this unfold, he was taking in an awful lot more than what it looked.
That's right. Appearances are so deceiving. Yeah, that's right.
When your students play the World Peace game, you also have them read The Art of War by Sun Tzu. And we've got a clip from the documentary film about John Hunter about this game in which one of your students reflects upon
the art
of war.
This is
in the context of the game he is playing.
We've really had enough of people attacking. I mean, we've been lucky. I mean, the time, now I'm feeling really weird because I'm living what Sun Tzu said 1 week. 1 week he said, those who go into battle and win and will want to go back, and those who lose in battle will want to go back and win. And so I've been winning battles, so I'm sort of going into battles, more battles. And I think it's sort of weird to be living what Sun Tzu said.
That is a fourth grader saying that.
It's incredible.
That could be a college student or a high schooler, at least.
Well, he had lived through it. And you know, the beautiful thing was, the funny thing, I went to look for that quote later, and Sun Tzu never said that. David had recontextualized his understanding of a quote from Sun Tzu in his own way to fit his situation and learned a much deeper lesson than Sun Tzu ever intended. Mm. David was caught in a cycle of war and violence, and he saw that rather than this is right, that is wrong. He saw the larger picture through his own experience and interpreting Sun Tzu in his own way.
Have you've had some kind of contact over this World Peace game with federal officials, correct?
You might say that, yeah.
How so?
Well, we were invited to screen the film at the United Nations, which was a huge and just deeply impactful meeting because those officials who lived that experience we were playing at really understood through the film, and there were tears in the room. But then one day we got an invitation from this very well-dressed woman, Mr. Hunter, we'd like to see you, and it was from the Defense Department, Pentagon, is what her card said. And so we made our way, that Chris Farina, the wonderful filmmaker of the film, and myself, made our way through the security into the Pentagon to find out what we were wanted for. And we found out the film had been screened 4 times at the Pentagon to policy and military people before we even arrived. They screened it a 5th time and had a 2-hour, deeply moving conversation with us, you know, a broke filmmaker and a small town school teacher, about creating empty space, which is what the World Peace Game allows. And they said, you know, we're human, we're hurting, we're suffering, we have colleagues and friends we've lost. You know, we know how to make war. We do that very well. We don't know how to create that empty space.
What does that mean? So create that, empty space.
So the game itself is sort of an open template where there's no real solution. You've got to come to it. And it's just chaos, it appears, when you start. But yet, out of that non-directive environment, students evolve or develop or create something. So there's an emptiness, an openness to their beginning and playing. And I think the officials there caught on to that space, that reflective open space where you take time to completely digest and probe the chaos itself without reacting immediately, without coming up with a plan, without having an agenda. And they asked us about it, and then 2 weeks later they invited my students to come to the Pentagon. 23 of my students went and had a mock press conference where they stumped the Pentagon press brief secretary a couple of times, actually, asked him some very tough questions. And we got a tour. We had a beautiful time, and then suddenly a door opens. We're ushered into the office of then Defense Secretary Leon Panetta. Now, he and the 2, 3, and 4-star generals from all branches of the service who spent the entire morning with my students were not there for a photo op, a warm, fuzzy meeting. They were there for a policy, peer-to-peer discussion. Generals talking to 9-year-olds saying, we handle insurgents in the field like this. How do you handle them? And my students could answer. Our supply chains are disrupted by global warming like this in the field. What do you do about it? And the students could answer. Such respect, such amazing understanding and openness to solutions. You know, it wasn't the heartless, faceless war machine we thought it was. There were people there with hearts like us.
That's just extraordinary. Yeah. John Hunter is our guest, the creator of the World Peace Game here on Current State on WKAR. The game's over 30 years old at this point, and the world has changed an awful lot in three decades. Has the game been altered to reflect those changes?
Oh, yeah. The students insist upon it. Mr. Hunter, we've got to have drones in the game. We need cyber hacking and cyber warfare. They're now in the game. We need a nation like North Korea that won't talk to anybody very much. We have that in the game now. And, of course, those vectors, those interdependent, interlocking problem scenarios, I have to design in an appropriate way for children, a bloodless, safe way, and yet cause them to think so deeply. And there's no way out. There's no way to win this game. I can't win this game, and I invented it. But yet, 35 years of playing, they continue to save the world every time.
So you don't let students win in the game. One huge challenge here, too, is, I mean, on top of all of the issues that you have referred to, it is important that each country's asset value must increase.
Maybe
that was behind the attack on the oil fields. That was a
quick way
to increase the asset value.
But, you know, the thing is that they're interlocking. They come to realize the interdependency of life. So if they were to deplete one area to increase their own, we're still not winning, because that ultimate goal of everyone's welfare being better off is not attained. So that gradual understanding of the multiple interlocking consequences dawns on them as they move beyond the impulsive behavior that first actions always seem to lead us to. And they do win. They win every time by achieving those goals, but in unorthodox ways I never could have planned or predicted. So it's really beyond my control. I've ceded control of the game to the students.
Do you feel like the World Peace Game flies in the face of the trend toward standardizing things? It would appear that it does.
Well, you know, I've understood in teaching. My master teachers from decades ago taught me that one size does not fit all. And they said initially, in total, that you have to look at each individual student and see what it is they love, what they care about, and who they really are, and then build curriculum to them, to that. And that really individualizes things, so you really can't have a sort of a mass program suited to all as a sort of a common denominator. And that kind of teaching, I think, is richer and deeper, where you do approach each student individually. It takes more time, more effort, more insight, and more work, but we're there to serve. We're servants, and so it's not for our comfort or convenience that we do this. We do this for each child's sake individually.
John Hunter is a Virginia-based teacher and creator of the World Peace Game. I recommend his TED Talk online, by the way, too. It's excellent. His book is called World Peace and Other Fourth Grade Achievements. John is in East Lansing for the Residential College of Arts and Humanities Wednesday Night Live series. A pleasure, John. Good luck.
Mark, thank you so much.